Welcome back to another episode of the Chronic Fatigue and Burnout Recovery Podcast. Today's episode, I'm going to be doing a little bit of a vulnerable share. This episode title is Why Symptoms Can Return After Years of Stability and Why It Doesn't Mean You're Back at the Beginning. So essentially making this distinction between when we are possibly relapsing and when the system is going through a recalibration, it might be going through a temporary setback or a temporary contraction, if we want to use that nervous system language, before another expansion, before another up-leveling. It's another organization of the system as the journey of healing continues, because the journey of healing is forever and lifelong if we choose to engage with it. And the reason why this episode is a little bit of a vulnerable share is because I want to share with you some things that I've been experiencing over the past couple of months. I have alluded to this in a previous episode when I talked about the different types of post-exertional malaise. And in that episode, I shared a little bit of a background of some of the things that have been happening to me recently. But this is an opportunity to go a little bit deeper and share more from personal experience, but also weaving in lessons for you, the listener, if you might be going through something similar right now. So let's go into the episode talking about why symptoms can return even after years of stability. And I guess the first thing to say here is when or if this happens to you, there can obviously be a lot of fear. Many people, even if they're doing really well in their recovery, they're making progress, they're feeling more stable, they can still have this fear around, what if things go back to how they were? What if I go backwards? What if I relapse? What if this doesn't last? And it's really understandable that someone would have this fear, because the nervous system remembers. The nervous system remembers some of the trauma and the past experiences of being unwell. And if there wasn't a little bit of like hypervigilance in the system around a potential setback or around something maybe changing again, that would probably be more abnormal. It would be more normal to actually continue to carry a little bit of hypervigilance around relapses or setbacks. But sometimes symptoms do reappear, and this can happen even as I work with clients who are in the beginning, more beginning stages of their journey. You know, we always talk about this concept that progress isn't linear. And so sometimes there can be some progress, and then there's like a little bit of a setback again. And then sometimes there's some progress, and then there's a little bit of a setback again. So we all know that progress isn't linear, but we often may not necessarily think about it in the bigger picture of things. We think maybe after we've made a certain degree of progress, we're never going to contract as much again. So we might, after we've expanded to a certain point, the possibility of contracting a lot after that, we don't necessarily think that that could be the case. But I'm here to tell you that it can, because that has been my experience over the past couple of months. But it's very understandable that if this is something that you're going through or something that you suspect you might have been going through, we can suddenly get hijacked again by the fear and thinking, you know, I'm relapsing, I'm going back to where I started. Everything I did has stopped working. There must be something I've missed. That's a really common one. People are like, oh, there must be something I missed, something I need to uncover, especially if you've had like a mold exposure or something like that. Oh, maybe I was exposed to mold again. You know, the mind can start to really start seeking for answers, and this keeps a certain amount of activation in the system. But I'm also here to tell you that in many cases, what looks like a relapse or what can look like a relapse is often something very, very different. Often it is a temporary system recalibration. Or as I've said already, it could be a contraction before another expansion. And that's what I want to talk about today. I want to talk about why symptom waves can reoccur even after long periods of stability, the difference between relapse and recalibration, how multiple inputs stack up together often to create the shift or the environmental pressure that is instigating some of these recalibration waves, and why these waves are often far more reversible than we feel in the moment. And I'm here to testify to that as well. Before I go into the content, I thought I would just speak from my personal experience for context. As many of you will know, if you've been listening to this podcast, I've been on this healing journey for quite a few years now, and I've really done what I think is an amazing job of rebuilding my capacity to exist in a very full life. I have my own business, which is both mentally and emotionally demanding. I work very hard. The work I do is very focused work. It's not just, you know, casual work, shall I say, but the intensity of the work that I do, it's intellectually intense, just to gather all the information and to, you know, create all the protocols and the understanding of what's going on in people's biochemistry and physiology and all those sciencey principles. And then also that emotional holding and the holding of each client on a somatic level, just to be with them in what they're going through. And I think that is something that really does take a lot of energy, is to be able to hold the intellectual and the emotional at the same time and create proportionate space for both. So in addition to having this very intense and demanding job, not to mention the challenges of actually running a business while doing this work, I also love to be physically active. That was always something that was such a passion of mine before I became unwell, and, you know, really felt the loss of that when it was taken away from me. But now I like to walk every day, usually anything from 10 to 20,000 steps, depending on the day. I'm swimming several times a week. I've been going to the gym a couple of times a week and doing cold plunges in the sea. And then, you know, also having a social life, maintaining a home, doing all of those other things. So it actually is a very full life. I would always welcome more fullness. I would still like to have more capacity for more things for sure. But I'm really happy with the life that I've been able to build for myself. And one of my goals this year is to swim Brown Sea Island. So Brown Sea Island is a little island in Poole Harbour, which is near where I live. And there's an event in September this year where you swim the circumference of the island, which I think is about 6.5 kilometers. So I am training for, I mean, it's in September. I've got a lot of time still, 6 months, but the goal for this year is to train and for that and complete the event. So that's sort of just painting a picture of my capacity. And since I've been working on my health and my journey, something that I've regularly engaged in has been somatic experiencing, which is the same trauma therapy that I use with clients. And we draw on tools and principles from this in the nervous system module in the Nurturing Resilience membership. So this is something I've also been engaged with now for going on 5 years. And it's just part of my life. I've been working with the same therapist for the past 5 years. And I feel like at this point, I will never let her go. She will have to break up with me before I break up with her, because it has just been an invaluable experience working with her. I am continuously, you know, setting goals and working on myself, and just, you know, I think one of the things that gives my life meaning is to heal and grow myself and then become an even better container to help others heal and grow. And through my own lessons and learnings from my own evolution, you know, that strengthens me as a practitioner, and it makes me increasingly better at what I do. So that's a huge value of mine and something that's really important in my life. And so recently, I'm sure I shared bits and pieces of this in previous episodes, but recently I was back in South Africa, my home country, over Christmas, had a really, really wonderful, very restful, very nourishing holiday with family, lots of sunshine, lots of good food, lots of walking, lots of swimming. I was doing some HIIT training in the garden and all was well. I had a lovely time. And I came back to the UK, I think it was on the 30th of December. It was where we had a really cold spell. So the temperature was sort of -1, -2, very, very sunny, but very, very cold. And at the same time, just after I got back from the trip, my period started. And on the first day of my period, I stupidly decided I need to get back in the sea straight away because if I don't get back in the sea now, I'm never going to get back in again and then it will be too cold and I need to get swimming in the sea again. So I did this cold dip when it was -2 degrees and there was frost on the sand on the first day of my period after traveling for 24 hours. It all sounds completely ridiculous when I say it out loud, but I think we forget. I'm sure there are people listening to this episode who have done things, you know, on whatever scale you're working with in your own life. You've done a whole bunch of stuff that you really shouldn't have done. And when you look back, you're like, well, of course that would make me feel bad. But we, in the moment, we just lose touch sometimes with our edges. And I think also at the time I had just been traveling, so there wasn't enough, like I bought some food, but I wasn't quite back in like English food mode and I was probably not eating enough carbohydrate. There was just loads of things going on and it didn't feel so great after that. And that was kind of like the first little like, oh, I just don't feel so good. But, you know, I acknowledged what happened. I was like, yeah, you probably shouldn't have done all that stuff and got back and, you know, took a little bit of time to restabilize, by a little bit of time, like a week to restabilize, and then proceeded to just get back into routine and all felt well. And then all of a sudden, I was just like absolutely struck by some emotional overwhelm, which felt like it came out of nowhere. I remember it very, very clearly. I had some issues with my car when I came back from South Africa and I was taking it to the garage and dropped the car off at the garage. And then I walked home and then had to walk back later that afternoon to go and pick it up. And I just remember absolutely sobbing. Like it was like January and I was wearing my raincoat with like the hood up because it was raining. And I was like, thank God, if anyone sees me, they'll probably just think that these tears are just streaming down my face are just raindrops. And at least I have my hood up so no one can see me. But I was walking along the road just absolutely sobbing. And what proceeded after that was more of the same, really, just periods of, I would say it was anxious sadness. So just real sort of heightened anxiety and then real low sadness. I started to notice like the workouts that I was tolerating fine in South Africa were making me feel very unwell. I had a lot more post-exertional malaise. Everything just felt, I'd say life felt chaotic. It felt chaotic inside and out. So there are various things just going wrong and everything from my car to a leaking kitchen tap. I then spilled tea on my laptop. The cat got sick, you know, just so many just life disruptions, which, you know, any one of those things is very manageable. But when it just feels like when you're in such an emotionally unstable place and all of this adulting comes in and you have to continue to function like an adult, it can be a huge amount. So I kind of knew that something wasn't really right. At the same time, I had done, I started to do some stool testing and I've done some hormone testing as well. I haven't had the results for the hormone test back yet. When I got the stool test results, and I think this is what I shared in the episode on post-exertional malaise, I did find that there were some moderate imbalances in my microbiome, much better than when I had previously done stool testing when I was ill. There was a very high inflammatory marker called calprotectin. When I say high, it was elevated. It wasn't off the charts high, like it might be in some cases if someone has irritable bowel disease or Crohn's or colitis, but it was high enough to be concerned. So there's some gut inflammation going on, which no doubt is feeding into this picture. But as time has gone on, I have started to identify some of what I've been experiencing as much more a nervous system load than anything else. But of course, in the chaos of this like sudden change in capacity, sudden change in emotional overwhelm, it can feel like everything is falling apart. And there was definitely a huge part of me which was feeling like, oh my God, like what happens? Like, why is this happening to me? And what if I can't work? What if I can't pay my mortgage? What if I lose my house? You know, you do start spiraling and some of those old fear patterns return. And of course, that doesn't help because it just makes you even more anxious and even more fearful. And that's like throwing flames on the fire, so to speak, of everything that's already going on. But after getting the stool test results, I've put a plan in place for gut support. I've only been on that plan probably it will be 3 weeks this week, Friday. So early days, although I would say I'm noticing an improvement in gut function since in the past, call it 2.5 weeks, I've been on the plan. So I feel really good about what's in place there from a digestive support perspective. I am waiting for the hormonal test. I'm turned 42 this year. I am probably getting into the early stages of perimenopause. So that is something that I notice, especially in the very beginning of my cycle when hormones are low. It can be a lot more stress sensitive. But what I've identified over the past little while is a huge amount of what I would call me being symptomatic or me experiencing post-exertional malaise has been, if I was to actually drill down into what's going on in my body, it's sympathetic activation. And in some cases, I would say it's anxiety. And this has seemed very strange to me initially. So you might be wondering why I say that. Why does anxiety seem very strange? It could possibly seem reasonable to some people. Anxiety is, I wouldn't describe myself as a very anxious person, or shall I say, I've never thought of myself as a very anxious person, but the sense I've got, and I'll share a little bit more about this, is that this is anxiety that has been there a very long time. And now there is only, after all the work I've done on myself, enough safety in my system to actually experience it, and then obviously be able to metabolize it, move it through the body, and hopefully in doing all of that, get into a bigger energy well, as we would talk about in somatic experiencing, a greater sense of capacity and a greater place in my healing journey. So one of the things that came up for me when I was feeling this overwhelming sadness, when it all initially kind of like kicked in, I was just had the sense of, okay, well, I know this is something I need to connect with. And I was like, what do you need? Not the most gentle or compassionate voice, but I was like, I don't know what you need. But what I was able to connect with was this sort of, I was like, this is just a very, very young part. This is a pre-verbal part, a part that doesn't necessarily have the words, which is why she can't tell you what she needs. And she is just like absolutely inconsolable. And I was like, well, I just had this image of like a little baby just being held and just like crying. And I was like, well, there's only one thing you can do with all of this activation in your system. You can just hold it and you can just be there with it. And I remember, I think I just got back from the gym and I was making my breakfast and I was sobbing and I just had my breakfast and then I just got on the couch with a hot water bottle and I lay there and I put my hand on my heart and I just said, like, I'm here. I'm here and so grateful for my beautiful cats. Jacob, my boy cat, he just jumped up and he got on my lap and it was almost like, I'm here too. And then Willow, who's my girl cat, she's very shy. She's not a lap cat, but she was like in her little sleeping place nearby and it was like, okay, she's here as well. And we all just like lay there and we just gave this experience the opportunity to be there. And then I'm really grateful. So the therapist that I work with, her areas of special interest are pre and postnatal and early developmental trauma. So a couple of weeks after that event happened, we had a session together and I told her that I had this image of the young child crying and we did a session where, again, with her there as the regulating force, I spent some time just holding and being with that young part and that was really good and that was really stabilizing for my system and then I felt a lot better after that. There's lots of other things that have also happened in the timeline, which I won't go into all the details of. So then I felt good for, I think it was like a week. I even came down with a cold for a week, but despite the cold, I actually felt quite good. And then my period came. And with my period, it just felt like my anxiety skyrocketed through the roof again. And again, I probably did a little bit too much around that more delicate time of my cycle, just anxiety completely through the roof. But there have been so many amazing learnings from this experience, because I think there can be this temptation when you think you're like, exercise has given you post-exertional malaise in the past. So you can have this fear of post-exertional malaise again. And I remember the one night I was like very early in my cycle, I think it was day 3 or 4. I couldn't sleep. I woke up at like 2 in the morning and just completely riddled with anxiety. I've never felt anxiety like that in my life before. Just actually painful that it was so heightened. And there was just this feeling of just like wanting to scream, not in a scream of rage, but a scream of like, help me, you know, like a small child that was absolutely desperate would scream. So very, very intense. And then I was just like, I just need to get up and move. So actually, all things being considered, I went to the gym. And by this point in time, I'd really scaled back my workouts. So I hadn't thrown the baby out with the bathwater and given up going to the gym completely. I just scaled back my workouts so that I was doing less work, basically taking on the recommendations that I made in the episode on the 3 types of post-exertional malaise, but reduce the volume right down, loads of rest breaks between each set. And when I came back from the gym, I was like, whoa, I feel so much better from the regulating impact of the exercise. So I learned that actually exercise in the right amount was helping me feel better and not worse. And swimming, for example, because especially swimming in the pool with the warm water, and when you swim, you tend to take a longer exhale and then the shorter inhale. So it's that focus on the breath, focus on the out-breath, focus on the rhythm, focus on the movement, the warmth of the water. That was really supportive for me, provided I just did like a mile and not 2 or 3. And then just walking, being outside, I would just go walk and just slowly, gently, really mindfully tuning into my body. Often I would walk and I would just cry. But I was with this understanding is like, this is all just energy that needs to move. And so some days it would feel really bad and I would like just be trying to get through the day. And then other days I could really bring myself back through the regulating exercises, and little by little, you know, more capacity was coming back into the system again. And yeah, I think the first sort of really low, emotionally low day I had was a couple of months ago now. So it's been 2 months of really working through this. My therapist also suggested that we increase the frequency of our sessions, which was a really good idea. The other thing which has been really helpful is she's got me to, I don't know the best way to describe this, but to like pack myself with cushions and pillows. So when I have this anxiety, I feel contained and I feel stabilized. So I'll put a rolled up yoga mat. I'll sit on the sofa or in my bed up against the headboard with a rolled up yoga mat supporting my spine. And then I have a big heavy yoga bolster. I'll sit cross-legged and I'll put that across the tops of my thighs. And then another cushion on top of that, this sort of bolsters my chest and I can hug it. And I'll just put on some nice music and a timer, because I feel sometimes it's helpful just to have some structure. So I'll put on a 15-minute timer and I'll just sit there. And sometimes I can feel there's a lot of vibration in my body. Sometimes I feel like energy wants to move. And then I make some little gentle movements maybe with that. But then I'm also noticing like a lot of yawning, a lot of burping. When I first started doing it, there was a lot of emotion, a lot of tears coming up. But the more I've been doing it, that's actually settled so much now. There isn't as much like deep sadness. And really just imagining like my cells and my organs that have been holding on to this really, really old stuff, just like releasing it, metabolizing it, letting it move through my body. And it's all been really, really helpful. And I hope it's helpful to you, the listener, like hearing me share this. It is such a vulnerable share, because I feel like, you know, I guess I'm perhaps... I don't know if this is the right word, but perhaps I'm a bit of a role model or somebody that people might look up to in their health and healing. And I guess maybe there's the expectation that I put on myself that I have to have it all worked out and all sussed out. Otherwise, you can't lead others. But I think that's obviously just a perfectionist part whose voice is a little bit loud, with the sense of, you know, we're human. We can't have it worked out all the time. And the way that I felt across the past 2 months has been at times distressing. It has been brutal. It has been overwhelming. It has felt hopeless and bottomless and just, yeah, completely distressing at times. And there's been a lot of fear. And I'm just so grateful for the support that I already have in my life with the various practitioners that I have supporting me, and how that's really got me through this time, and how some of the tools that I've learned have been really supportive. And although it's been all of these horrible things, and it's been one of the most challenging waves I've had to process in a long time, it has been an invaluable learning experience, and an experience I hope that will help me hold others through similar experiences more delicately and compassionately. But it has been very hard won, very, very hard won to be coming out the other side of all of this. I'm happy to report, like, I went back to the gym today. I've been ramping up my exercise again. So, you know, I do feel like I'm moving now on the other side of this, but it has really, really been a lot. So I wanted to share this experience with you, because you might be finding yourself in a similar place to where I've found myself in the past 2 months. And you might be looking for reassurance. You might be looking for a light at the end of the tunnel. You might just be looking for some sort of sense of safety that you can anchor into, that this is not a relapse, this is not regression, and then you will get to the other side. So there's a few more kind of practical things that I would like to touch on as part of the episode, which go above and beyond my story. The first thing is that the nervous system remembers. And so what this means is that even after you have improved in your health, and even after you have made progress and you've built capacity and you're back in life and you're more in the world again, the nervous system still has its patterns, and the immune system still has its patterns, and the metabolic system still has its patterns. And even though you have worked on rebalancing and generating more capacity, there can still be a memory of the previous stress loads that you have once experienced. And sometimes when there is an influx of life, if you live in the world and you're an adult and you have to deal with adult things, sometimes there's an influx of things that maybe cause some of these old patterns to perhaps simmer back to the surface again. And that's not failure, and it doesn't mean that you've done anything wrong, but what it is helpful information for you to maybe double down a bit and revisit the things that have helped you in the past. Recovery often means that we have increased resilience. That's why I have a membership called Nurturing Resilience. But it doesn't mean that your system is perfect. It can still mean that your system is still susceptible to setbacks or to changes when the load becomes too great. And I'll go through the different loads in a moment and also relate back to my experience. It's kind of like this. When I was 8 years old, I twisted my ankle really, 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 really badly. And now, and there was a period of time when my ankle was super swollen. I remember I was, you know, in bed, it was all swelled up, I couldn't walk on it for a while. And then obviously I rehabbed it and then I could. And for the most part, it's pretty good. But every now and again, I sometimes sprain that ankle because there's an inherent weakness there from that historical injury that happened almost more than 3 decades ago. That ankle is so much stronger. You know, I've gone to the gym, I do my single leg work, I balance on one foot at a time, you know, do all these things which can be helpful for the ankle. But every now and again, you know, maybe I'm a bit fatigued, I go on a hike, I stand on a stone, the balance is off, boom. Ankle twists again. And it's not because I did anything wrong per se. It's just this buildup of load in the moment. And people with chronic illness, they often have sensitive systems. My system is so sensitive. It's never going to change, unfortunately. I have more capacity now to handle my own sensitivity, but it's still sensitive. And sensitive doesn't mean fragile. It doesn't mean it's going to break at the drop of a hat, but it does mean that a sensitive system will still respond to a cumulative load. And that is something that can potentially cause some sort of recalibration event as the load in the system becomes too high again. So let's just actually talk about these words, relapse versus recalibration. So true relapse, like if you are truly going backwards, what you probably would experience would be a sustained decline over months. So in my story that I shared with you, I mean, I talked about how there was a decline. I could no longer tolerate the workouts that I had previously tolerated. But there was a bottom to that. It's like when I took out the workouts, I feel better. So there wasn't a sustained decline. Oh, I can't tolerate the workouts. Now I can't tolerate the swimming. Now I can't tolerate the walking. There wasn't like an ongoing loss of function or a progressive loss of function. There was just a change in capacity, but not a progressive loss of function. A true relapse also might, again, related to this progressive loss of function, might also be an inability to stabilize despite reducing load. When I was finally ready to acknowledge, hang on a moment, these workouts are making me feel really bad and this isn't okay, then I was like, right, we need to take a step back. We need to do less. We need to have, you know, maybe don't go to the gym for a bit. The other thing that was really triggering for me was actually the cold water. So took a break from swimming in the sea, took a break from the gym, then tried to reintroduce the gym at a reduced load and felt better for that. There wasn't an inability to find a sense of stability again. I made an adjustment. The body restabilized. That is not a relapse, that's a recalibration. And then there might be an ongoing trigger. So sometimes relapses occur because you have been exposed to mold again, or something else has been going on. But it can be very clear, okay, this is happening and now I'm feeling this way and this is something I can't necessarily change immediately. So a recalibration often looks like a sudden symptom flare. So I described to you, I think there was this sudden change in my emotional state, which looked like extreme anxiety and extreme emotional overwhelm manifesting in sadness or crying. The nervous system can sometimes feel more sensitive to what's going on. There might be a little bit more fatigue. There might be a change in sleep. There might be increased reactivity to stress. But one of the things that I experienced in this recalibration wave was that, like, not every day was a bad day. So I might have had felt really low in the morning, but then by the afternoon felt more like myself again. Or I was responsive. So when I did something to support my nervous system, my nervous system responded, and then my baseline capacity came back again. So one of the things I remember saying to my therapist, I said, it feels so chaotic. This feels more chaotic than anything I've ever been through, because within a day I can feel awful and then exactly like how I think I should feel. And so very, very up and down. One of the things she said to me was, when you are getting closer and closer to the core disorganization in your system, things do feel more chaotic. But then there is also this ability to restabilize again and then have maintained your capacity. So it's not chaos with physical regression. It's chaos and then return to baseline. Chaos and then return to baseline. That can be a sign of a recalibration wave. So when the body recalibrates, it can temporarily behave as if things are worse, but the underlying system is not actually gone all the way back to the beginning. If you had gone all the way back to the beginning, there would be a regression, a progressive loss of function, a progressive loss of capacity over time. So that is something that you can think about if you are experiencing a temporary setback. So the other thing I think it's really important to bring to your attention is the stacking of inputs. This is something I have conversations with my clients about all the time. Whenever they are experiencing their own recalibration wave, wherever they are in their journey, maybe they're still just very much in the early stages of their journey, they've made some progress and then something has slipped backwards again. It's really just, not really, but rarely, just one single thing. Usually it's accumulation of many different things. And this is what I say about fatigue recovery all the time. It's not just one thing. Just as much as the stacking of inputs can set us backwards, it's also the stacking of support that can help us move forwards. So, for example, all the things that could potentially be relevant here. So physiological inputs, if you've had an acute illness, if you're someone like me, you're probably navigating the beginnings of perimenopause, there are going to maybe be some hormonal shifts or menstrual cycle changes. Or as I shared with you with the stool test, there's some disruption to my microbiome. And because of the hormonal shifts and the anxiety, there's sleep changes as well. So you're not sleeping well, you had an acute infection, you had have already some pre-existing disruption to your microbiome, and now you're experiencing even just the transition from, you know, being the luteal phase of your cycle now to the follicular phase of your cycle. There's a hormonal shift there, irrespective of perimenopause. And so here I will share with you. So I had a virus. And then just after I recovered from the virus, then I had my period. So there were two things that sort of happened quite close together on top of everything else that I've been talking about, the microbiome, the trauma work. And it was the worst period I have had in ages, not from a, you know, bleeding, cramping perspective, but just from an emotional perspective. It was intense. It was the peak of this whole experience. So then we also have the nervous system input. So if you're doing more processing work, if you are working with a therapist or you're working on your own and you are doing deep work, there can temporarily be a reduction in your capacity as your nervous system is processing everything. So if you are experiencing any big emotional shifts, if you are doing any deep processing work, there might be a temporary reduction in capacity while this is happening. Life transitions are also a big one. So if you have ended a relationship, if you've moved home, if you've gone back to work or changed jobs or decided to stop working, even that, you know, obviously there's a huge identity shift that happens when we decide to stop working, or maybe you've increased your cognitive load because you're taking on more hours at work. Those are all really going to have a significant impact on you and your nervous system. And then additionally here, the physical inputs. So if you have perhaps done any travel, if you are increasing your exercise, if you've experienced a change in routine, if you're exposing yourself to more heat or more cold, you know, these things can all add up. If you're fasting, if you're making dietary changes, if you're adapting to a lower carbohydrate diet, all of these things add up. So if I was to go through these and sort of, you know, I went through the physiological ones, but in additionally, so we had the virus, the microbiome disruption, the hormonal shifts, the menstrual cycle, the processing, then recent travel to South Africa. Then when I got back from South Africa and I started doing loads and loads of swimming, possibly just increasing the swimming. And then I had all these extra things, the problems with the car, the problems with the laptop, the cat getting sick, completely disrupting my normal routine because I was out and about driving around doing all the errands and whatnot. You know, when I speak it all out loud to you here, I'm like, whoa, that was so much. That was really a lot. And no wonder you had to take this temporary step back on some of your other commitments like exercise, you know, to give space just for all of life to happen. And I think, you know, exercise is the one thing that I just love the most. So it's always going to be the thing that I hold onto and grip onto so tightly. Therefore, it's the hardest thing to let go. But I think what I'm learning is sometimes it's often the thing that when I let go of it, it does really help the most. So all of these things, you know, all of these inputs, they stack together. It's not one thing, it's everything, but together they can temporarily exceed the system capacity. So the body isn't responding to a single stressor in isolation, it's responding to the total load. And even though this response to the load is temporary, these waves can often look dramatic. They feel dramatic. In my share that I've given you, I talked about how this felt like the most chaotic thing that I had ever experienced in my whole journey to date. And so here it's important to understand when our regulation capacity dips temporarily, we still do experience physiological disruption. We experience maybe more autonomic symptoms, inflammation can increase, our sleep can become impacted, and then when we're not sleeping well, we feel worse for that, and our energy can be inhibited and less efficient. And this can feel very similar to our experiences of of the past. And it can feel very frightening because there can be this overcoupling in the system of last time I felt like this, it was very traumatic. But we have to understand that even though the flavor of what we're experiencing is similar, the internal system is different because you have more regulation capacity. And when these big experiences come up, often it is because we have the regulation capacity, we can now work through some of the deeper layers in the system. You also understand your body better. You understand how to pace better. You understand this whole process and how to take care of yourself better. And that really counts for something. It means you can turn the ship around pretty quick. You know how to reduce load. You know where it matters for you. And the physiology is not the same as the prolonged dysregulatory state that you probably experienced at the onset of illness. You've come a really long way. Your physiology is more balanced. You have the greater capacity to regulate. And so even though there is some disturbance, there isn't as much dysregulation in the system as there once was. So even though the body can temporarily revisit a familiar pattern or a flavor of a familiar pattern, it can do so without getting stuck. We might enter into something that we've experienced before, but we don't get stuck there for as long. So for example, in the past, where it could have been weeks or months even, now it might just be a number of hours or even a number of minutes in some cases. So what do you do? You found yourself in this place where you are going through a recalibration wave, and now you have to decide how you support your body. So the support is actually so much more simple than you would think. I think one of the biggest things we can do to support ourselves is temporarily reduce the overall load on our body. We scale back. When we scale back, if the system settles again after scaling back, then we know, okay, this was a temporary recalibration. If we scale back and we still feel unstable, if we scale back and there's a continuous decline or a progressive loss of function, then we know we need to dig deeper and we need to know what's going on. But for the most part, if we scale back and the system restabilizes, we know we're in a good place and we have a foundation on which we can start to build again. In order to support the system, we always want to have nervous system regulation in our toolbox, things that we can do to bring the system back into stability again are always going to be invaluable. And I know what it's like when you feel good. Some of these things fall by the wayside, but often we need to bring them back. We need to double down a little bit more on how we support our system in these more challenging times. In my case, the thing that has been really helpful was doing I called it the packing exercise. I don't know what else to call it, containment exercise. So containing the body with support for the spine, pressure on the legs, the pillow in front of the chest, and just being in that contained space was very supportive and stabilizing for the nervous system. We also want to think about coming back into rhythm. This is where routines matter. So I talked about how there were all these extra things, the trips to the car garage, the broken laptop, the cat going to the vet, all these extra things I had to fit in my day, which were interrupting my rhythm and my routine. And that can potentially be destabilizing. We also see this a lot with seasonal changes, you know, clocks changing, winter time. There's not as much sunlight, not as much time outside because there's lack of daylight or cold weather. All of these things can be destabilizing for our natural rhythm and our natural routines. So it might be helpful here to reflect if you do have a stable routine. And then if the answer is no, I don't have a stable routine, then how can you restabilize your routine? I know personally, as I've been going through this journey myself, there are just so many life things happening that have really stopped me getting into that routine that I knew that I needed, but life happens. So then you're just doing all the other things things so that you can hang on until you can get back into that routine again. And that's where the nervous system tools can be really supportive, just to keep you resilient until you can restabilize your routine. One of the things we really want to avoid is what I call protocol stacking. So this is where we kind of take this green pharmacy approach and we have a pill for an L, but we just use natural things instead. And so often when we experience a bit of a setback or reduction in capacity, this fear can kick in, there's this hypervigilance in the system, and then it can be really tempting to channel that hypervigilance into some sort of seeking behavior to help us feel safe. So we will go online, we'll start researching, we'll start Googling, we'll ask ChatGPT, and then we come up with some sort of solution, some sort of action plan, and then we're adding in supplements, or we're doing different protocols. And sometimes that can be too much for a system which is also overloaded. And so what I'm learning more and more from my clinical practice is sometimes, most of the time, less is more. And when people are in this state of chaos and disorganization, the solutions help them feel safer, but sometimes just holding steady is the safest thing that we can do. So really important that we don't just start layering on extra things because we think that that's what the body needs. Sometimes it's actually taking away things, getting back into that routine, reducing those loads that I've spoken about. And yes, sometimes protocols are helpful. Like, as I said, I did the stool testing and I changed my supplements as a consequence of that stool testing. But if I tell you what I'm doing, it's just basically like probiotics and some short chain fatty acids. It's not an aggressive protocol. It's just a gently supportive protocol. And the final thing, which kind of links with this, is just observing patterns instead of catastrophizing. And I think this is where having a third party who can see the information a little bit more objectively can really be helpful just to ground you back in. You know, in my case, it was just actually seeing, well, there's been like loads of different inputs, like listing out all the inputs and being like, no wonder you would feel this way. And what happens if you take away some of these inputs? Oh, you feel better. That's a really important part of the process. It's instead of just going to fear and catastrophe, that we see things a little bit more objectively. So one of the most important things that you can do if you find yourself in this sort of recalibration wave is not aggressively go in and try and fix, but to support stability. Stability, stability, stability. You'll hear me talk about it again and again and again on this podcast, but that is what matters most. So it's really, even, you know, we talked about not catastrophizing, it is still important that we acknowledge that you will probably feel some panic, you will probably feel some grief, you'll probably feel some shame, a fear of losing progress, and that's very, very understandable. But understand that one wave doesn't necessarily erase all the time that you've put into your physiological adaptation. Just as much as your nervous system and your immune system and your metabolic system remember what's happened in the past, they also remember what you have built since then. And we really want to rest in assurance that what we have done matters already, and our system has a memory of the support and the reorganization that we have already given it. What you may find is that every single time you allow for the wave and you add in the support and you reduce the load and you do all the things that I've spoken about, you may actually be pleasantly surprised with how quickly you bounce back, how quickly your system returns to stability. And as you know, I always say to my clients, this is going to happen again. You're going to find yourself in a similar situation like this again. But as this happens, what you'll probably notice is you continue to have the memory of the positive experience. Last time this happened, I got through it. Last time this happened, I got through it. And there was more expansion on the other side. The more you have these experiences, the better you actually get at handling them. So final message, just to close and to ground, is that a spike in symptoms doesn't mean you've gone backwards. And it definitely doesn't mean you're at the beginning all over again. Recovery is rarely linear. I'm sure most people already know that. But most long-term recoveries include periods of fluctuation, periods of recalibration, and periods of adaptation. The goal isn't to build a robot body. It's not about building a body that never fluctuates in response to life. That would not be human. But it's to build a system that knows how to find its way back to stability. And we find our way back to stability again and again and again and again as we navigate the ups and downs that come with being a human and living in this world and living in this life. I don't know if it's really talked about enough online or in other podcasts about these periods of fluctuations, because everybody wants to look like they're doing a good job and they're achieving a healing. But I hope you have appreciated some of the shares I've given today. And, you know, I could have used my own shame about my process as a reason to keep this hidden. But instead, I've used my courage to present it to you today. And I hope if you are going through a hard time, if you are struggling with a recalibration wave, this has given you some insight, something to anchor into. And I'm sure you will reach your next expansion very soon. So thank you for staying with me today. You probably haven't noticed, but this is the third segment I've recorded because I had to keep on taking breaks due to the drilling outside. But I hope that this hasn't interrupted the flow too much. And I'll see you in the next episode. I've got a series coming up basically based on some of the themes that I've shared today. So just some of the things that I've been reflecting on as I've learned through this recalibration wave that I've been going through. And I'll be digging into those in the next few episodes. I'll be talking about gentle movement, when movement can be really supportive for the nervous system, fine tuning, and I'll also talk about sensitive nervous systems. So I hope you can look forward to all of that, and I'll see you in the next episode.